Gibson versus Jeffrey Kilpatrick.
Ms. Markley, is your office closed on Fridays?
We have completed our furlough days until the next fiscal year, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Friedman, we are ready when you are.
This is an appeal from a denial of qualified immunity on summary judgment to Mayor Kilpatrick. There are several reasons or several bases on which this court could base an opinion overturning the ruling of the district court, but the most straightforward would be to grant qualified immunity to Mayor Kilpatrick based on Garcetti v. Sabalas, because at the very least it was not clearly established that the chief's expression was protected by the First Amendment. We argued that in our brief. Frankly, the plaintiff did not address our not clearly established argument, and from our standpoint has conceded that issue. We've cited three cases. Well, the district court relied on one case, Davis v. McKinney, to state that or to hold that it was clearly established or that we were not entitled to summary judgment. Davis is not applicable to this case. Davis was a case in which an auditor, an inside auditor for a public entity, reported to the FBI that there was misuse of an internet use policy. It was not a law enforcement case. This court held that because it was an external, unrelated entity, it was not part of her duties. In Watts v. Jackson, a district court case out of Southern District of Mississippi, the court held that a police officer reporting to the FBI that the mayor was engaged in criminal conduct was not protected because that was within the scope of his duties. In Hubert v. Pittsburgh, the Ninth Circuit held that a police officer's expression was not protected when he reported to the FBI alleged criminal conduct within the police department and then participated in the investigation. And then in Nixon v. Houston, a Fifth Circuit case, a police officer at a, I think it was an automobile wreck scene, talked to the media, and then the next day while off duty, talked to the media about the situation again. This court held that was not protected. So that's three law enforcement cases that we relied on. The plaintiff did not address any of those cases, to my knowledge. At the very least, it is not clearly established that the chief was engaged in protected activity when he went to the FBI, when he went to the state auditor's office. He went to four agencies. But it was the state auditor's office that he ended up working with. So at the very least, it's not clearly established that that was protected activity, since there's no controlling authority that stated that it was protected. I think the weight of the authority is that in fact it was protected. The Davis v. McKinney case simply is not applicable here. The plaintiff relies in his response, argues that the chief was acting as a private citizen when he reported this to the various law enforcement agencies. And again, for purpose of this, the plaintiff has conceded that these are law enforcement agencies. I don't think there's any doubt, I don't think anybody argue with the fact that police chiefs have a duty to work with other law enforcement agencies. And in fact, in this case, the chief conceded that he previously worked with DEA and the FBI, two of the agencies that he reported this alleged conduct to. In order to make this argument that he was acting as a citizen, even though he's conceded that these are duties that to work with these agencies and to detect and prevent crime are part of his duties, the plaintiff argues that he was acting as a private citizen. And to support that, he cites 18 U.S.C. Section 4, which deals with felonies where there is both knowledge and either concealment or participation in a felony. Well, here, the mayor was never charged with any crime, and I doubt seriously that the plaintiff wants to concede that he was involved in concealing or participation in whatever crime was committed. So it is our contention that the mayor is entitled to qualified immunity here. Quite frankly, that's the simplest, most straightforward way to go, but
what do the Mississippi statutes set forth in terms of the duties of the chief here as far as, I guess, you know, his responsibility or affirmative responsibility? I'm not sure whether this, you know, because somebody's saying whether it's a crime or not, but I'm not clear on what the specific duties that the Mississippi statutes may govern. I know that's not going to the initial point you're making about the establishment of the constitutional right, but just for trying to understand the scenario,
right.
Do the Mississippi statutes sort of speak to what the duties mayor would have here, whether exercised or not?
All right. Well, his duties under 4563C are to detect and prevent crime, and under 2121-1 to supervise police department employees. But those are the 4563C is, I believe, the statute that the Watts v. Jackson court relied on in granting in finding that the police officer is not engaged in protected activity. I think the Hubert v. Pittsburgh court in the Ninth Circuit relied on a similar statute from up there, Pittsburgh, or I guess a Pennsylvania statute that was very similar in nature. In this case, the chief detected crime by starting the investigation by contacting these various agencies. He prevented crime or attempted to prevent crime. According to him, the reason he did this was to keep the mayor from stealing taxpayer money by misuse of the gas card.
Why would that be a matter for the DEA?
I have no idea. Well, this is not an issue in this case, but at some point, the DEA did not participate in the investigation, but at some point, the chief made some offhanded comment that he thought the mayor was engaged in some kind of drug activity. That's not an issue here, to my knowledge. The only investigation was by the state AG's office and investigator Swain over this gas card, but that's where I cannot tell you why, quite frankly, what his motive was in contacting these four agencies.
Is a chief of police in a different position than just a line policeman?
Absolutely, a line. But the chief has overall responsibility to detect and prevent crime by statute. He has a duty to supervise the employees of the police department. A regular police officer couldn't go to another police officer and assign him to follow the mayor around. Another police officer couldn't go to the city clerk, or not effectively go to the city clerk, with the investigator and order the city clerk to keep up with gas receipts. And that is why this case is even stronger than the Watts case, the Hubert case. Those were just regular police officers, and that wasn't protected. That speech wasn't protected. In this case, you have the chief law enforcement officer for the town who by statute runs the police department day-to-day, and by statute supervises employees. This could not have happened but for him being chief, and he wouldn't have known about this but for him being chief. So, you know, and like I say, he's conceded that these were duties, these were things that he had a duty to do. He's just trying to say, by the way, I think I'll be a citizen now. And if you could do that, Garcetti would be meaningless. Everybody could say, no, I'll be a citizen now. It's not what I do, or I'll just opt for the time being to be a citizen and step out of my role as a public employee. I think Garcetti held that in public employment, you just got to expect to check some of your rights at the door. And that's just, you know, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. That's just the law as we have it. The plaintiff, in his response, takes exception to that and argues strenuously, essentially, that Garcetti shouldn't be, that it's just not fair. Well, as I've told my children many times, life's not fair, but that's just the law. And that's just nothing. I'm not here to change, overrule the Supreme Court. So where we are here is that I don't think there's any doubt that this was unprotected speech. One other thing I want to point out, another basis, quite frankly, for granting qualified immunity, and that is that in Burlington Northern, the Supreme Court held that in Title VII retaliation cases, the dissuade a reasonable worker standard applied. But to our knowledge, after search, and the Fifth Circuit has never applied that standard to the First Amendment retaliation case, and in fact is stuck with the ultimate employment decision. All the district courts within the Fifth Circuit that we found still apply the ultimate employment decision standard. Therefore, it certainly is not clearly established that the standard for First Amendment cases is dissuade a reasonable worker. In Dupree v. Sanders, 2009 case out of the circuit, the court granted qualified immunity because the ultimate employment standard in First Amendment retaliation cases was not clearly established. So for that additional reason, we're entitled to qualified immunity. I mean,
say the chief of police here thought that the mayor was doing something improper, and so he went and to the FBI.
Yes.
Say he had gone to the mayor pro tem or the assistant mayor, the next in command, and said, I think the mayor is doing something improper. Do we have a different scenario there where not reporting to another law enforcement office, but reporting to someone else not involved in law enforcement? Is that a First Amendment
No, it's not a First Amendment violation, because now if you go back to Davis v. McKinney, which is what the plaintiff and the district court relied on, I think the Fifth Circuit held that that was protected because it was to an external, unrelated entity. In this case, these law enforcement entities are not unrelated to the police chief. In that case that you just laid out, it wouldn't even be external, it would be internal. Because he would be, you know, that is somebody in the chain of command above him in the city. So that wouldn't be protected either. That would be even closer to what we had in Garcetti, the specific facts of Garcetti. Are there any other questions?
You know, the district court, as you say, did rely on Davis, but I don't know, sort of went off on the report to the DEA and the FBI and all that to say that, you know, that those reports were more private than otherwise. It sort of taps to the question Judge Prado asked you about. I mean, what was the chain of command here? I mean, from the chief then, well, if we're talking about the mayor, was there a board of aldermen, or what was the town set up?
Well, the town set up is the chief really reports to the board of aldermen. The mayor, you know, has day-to-day responsibilities, but the final policymaker for the city is the Board of Aldermen.
Okay.
And in this case, well, the mayor doesn't even vote except in the case of a tie.
So you would argue that, I mean, you do argue, notwithstanding maybe some peripheral personal concerns, the umbrella of the chief is so large and wide that any of these statements undeniably have to been within his official capacity.
Well, the statements that we're talking about did. I'm sure that we could come up with some scenario that would be outside the purview of his duties as a police chief. But what he was complaining about had to do with, obviously, a alleged crime and investigation of a crime. And I think that that is the main job of police chief, is to detect and prevent crime, which is what he was doing here, or trying to do.
Well, I assume you made the same argument to Judge Mills. So where did the departure go?
I'm going to check to Judge Mills. I can only read the opinion. He got hung up on this Davis v. McKinney case. With all due respect to Judge Mills, he got hung up on Davis v. McKinney, did not address Watts, did not address Hubert, did not address Nixon. And at the very least, even if you say that Davis applied here, and we say it doesn't because it's not law enforcement, it's just an inside accountant, even if you said it applied, there's certainly authority going the other way that makes it where it's certainly not clear that it was his expression was protected, and that's the definition of qualified immunity.
All right. Thank you, sir. Yes, you've reserved rebuttal time. We'll hear from Mr. Wade.
Yes, Your Honor, court, please. Gary Freeman is such a skilled lawyer that I'm reminded of it every time I see him, and I think he's really skilled today to talk about anything in this case but the basic facts of it. And I think that's probably the fundamental thing. And I'm talking about the question here that Your Honor asked about why did he go to the DEA. Well, I might just mention how this came about. When he took over as chief, he was specifically told by one of the existing patrolmen there that the mayor, I busted the mayor for drugs, but I can't pursue it or I'm not going to do anything about it. And I also think that he's stealing gas from the city. That's the context of it. The chief, there was a lengthy investigation. It started in 06. There was a lengthy investigation. He went to the State Department of Audit. The investigation, and I do think McKinney's a controlling case, by the way, Your Honor. These other cases are just not close enough on the facts to have anything to do with this. The basic rule of McKinney was if you go to an outside agency, that's protected speech under the First Amendment. That's what he did. He went to the Attorney General. He went to the State Auditor. The State Auditor spearheaded the investigation, but the chief had to participate in it. He lined up the local, and it's true that he did his law enforcement job by lining up the local gas station, getting those tickets. He had his dispatcher keeping a record of whenever the chief was coming in there to get out the gas card. The argument they make of, well, the chief didn't even know about it in their brief is, by the way, absurd. He had to go to the police department to get the gas card, and it would have been logical that the mayor figured out that the chief was the one behind all this. The chief the mayor didn't pay back the money until September of 08. That's in the record. He paid back the money in September of 08, and then it was 09 when all of these write-ups and everything came about that ultimately sparked his termination. He was not just writing him up, he was telling him, I'm going to get you fired. He was writing him up and said, I'm going to get one more board voter and get you fired. And then after this case was filed, of course, he ultimately did get him fired. Regarding counsel's fundamental claim, Your Honor, that this is a Garcetti issue and that Garcetti compels this result, I just do not believe under any common sense ruling of Garcetti that is the case. And you have to look to the basic facts of Garcetti and contrast those facts with this case. Garcetti, there was a prosecutor who was fundamentally arguing for the other side. He was saying the defense has a point here about this warrant being improper and the description being wrong in the warrant. He was fundamentally advocating for the other side. And the Supreme Court said under those facts, we're dividing this into citizen speech and employee speech, and he's simply engaging in employee speech. In this case, Your Honor, the duty to report a crime belongs to both. The duty to report a crime is an ordinary citizen's duty. I simply cited that federal statute by way of illustration. That's just, it is a duty to report a crime, and under some circumstances, you can be held liable for a felony for not reporting a crime. Counsel says, well, why wasn't the mayor prosecuted? Well, probably because of all these retaliatory things he was doing against the chief to get him fired. Your Honor, I defended a case for just almost exactly this same thing. That's embezzlement under Mississippi law when he uses the public gas for his private vehicle and takes these trips on it. That's a crime under Mississippi law, and he did what he had a duty to do under as a citizen. So, Your Honor, Garcetti divides speech. It's got to be the employee's speech or it's got to be citizen speech. Well,
right,
in this case,
he's the chief of police. So how are we seeing this line between him being the chief of police, albeit this is a town, but, you know, it has the basic governmental setup, most notions of the chief of police, although having administrative duties nonetheless, is a law enforcement officer, correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely. He was doing, no question, counsel's correct, Your Honor, that he's doing his duty as a law enforcement officer, but he's also doing it as a citizen, and that's...
Well, hold right there.
Yes, I'm sorry.
You know, hold that. I mean, that's a mighty fine point. So, wherein, I mean, I get it. I like Davis Mead McKinney. I was on the panel. You know, I signed off on it. I get scared when I see these cases that I've been on, because I don't remember exactly what we did.
Yeah, I was going to say, so, especially the ones you don't remember.
I don't remember. So, and I get nervous and very careful with my questions, unless I might see myself coming. But, you know, he's the chief of police. I mean, you know, we get these where, you know, it's a teacher, you know, in a school, and you're stepping out because they've got a child. But he's the chief of police. He's got these overriding responsibilities under the Mississippi statutes that are pled, et cetera. So, I mean, just help us understand, is it the mere reporting to these other agencies because of these other investigations that creates this separate pathway as a private citizen? But, I mean, how do you get out from under? You are the chief of police. You've got a duty arguably bigger than the ordinary citizen, you know, to report the crime.
Your Honor, my only response to that is that both citizens, and not only the chief, but all police officers have a duty to report crime. I mean, I would concede that a police chief, as does any police officer, has a duty to either arrest somebody or report it. And in this case, he acted as a police chief, certainly, but he also acted as a citizen. It's a citizen duty. And I understand, Your Honor, saying it's a very narrow distinction. Well, Garcetti was a very narrow case and involved rather novel circumstances where you had a lawyer not acting in the best interest of his employer. In this case, what you have is a person who is undisputably, you know, the Supreme Court says the basic test for qualified immunity is fair notice. Did the mayor have fair notice that he couldn't be reprimanded and trying to get a chief fired because he was investigating him? Well, under fair notice, Your Honor, anybody would have, I mean, just any type of common sense would know. And of course, Your Honor asked about Mississippi law. Under Mississippi law, you can't be discharged for reporting illegal activity. Anybody would have known that it's illegal to be firing the chief because he's reporting you for what is, in effect, criminal activity. So there was fair notice. There's not any qualified immunity. There's not also, Your Honor, discretion is important in this case. You would think normally the mayor would have discretion in how he does write-ups. Well, that's not the case under Mississippi law. Under Mississippi law, when they cite it, there's an attorney general's opinion, the mayor cannot supervise the chief. All he can do, he can't supervise law enforcement activities. All he can do is make a recommendation to the board as to whether a chief is hired or fired. They have cited the attorney general's opinion. So that when he sent these 9 write-ups that Judge Mills counted up, all frivolous, and I could tell about all of them, but when he gave all those, he was absolutely acting with malice. As one of the aldermen testified, he had something against the chief, and the only thing it could have been, Your Honor, logically, was the fact that he turned him in on these guests, you know, on these things.
Well, I take it you don't argue that there's, frequently in the qualified immunity cases, one of the arguments we get, there's a factual dispute, you know, under Supreme Court law that precludes qualified immunity. So you're not arguing that there's any factual dispute here that militates against the qualified immunity. You argue as a matter of law. I mean, what's teed up here is a question of law, whether or not there was a clearly established constitutional right, et cetera. I mean, the argument is not here that there's a factual predicate unknown that voids qualified immunity. You're saying this is teed up as an up or down on the law, First Amendment.
Your Honor, as to the Garcetti issue, yes, counsel argues in his brief extensively that there was not enough proof of causation, that there wasn't enough evidence of that. That is a factual question over which the court, we believe, has no jurisdiction. We think there was plenty of evidence of causation, you know, given the testimony by one of the aldermen that the mayor was out to get him for some personal reason. The dispatcher sent a letter in June of 2010 and said, I'm just collateral damage. The mayor's trying to get the chief because he turned him in about the guests. There's a world of circumstantial evidence in the record that the of causation, but I believe the court has no jurisdiction over that. The district judge found there was causation, and that's a material issue of fact. That's not, in my opinion, there is no jurisdiction over that. The question is, was the law settled that the chief could go to outside agencies and report criminal activity by the mayor? Your Honor, you would not expect there to be reported decisions on this. He says, well, you haven't rebutted our cases, that, which, by the way, are not on point, but you haven't rebutted our cases. Well, you're not going to have reported cases very often where a mayor is stealing and the chief of police is investigating him or reporting him. You just wouldn't expect to have that. But he would have fair notice that you can't steal and that you can't report
something. If this, the facts were different and it was not the mayor but an ordinary citizen that was possibly doing something criminal, and the chief of police went to another outside agency and said, investigate this because we have some issues and problems going on in my city, that would be part of his job?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not sure I followed you.
It's not the mayor. It's just an ordinary citizen, but the chief of police determines that he needs to go to an outside law enforcement agency investigate and say somebody, the gas station attendant or whoever, is doing something wrong. He can go to the FBI, and that's part of his job.
Yeah, I think it would still be, and I hope I'm answering Your Honor's scenario. I believe it would still be, we would still maintain that even that is free speech, not only because he goes to an outside agency, but because a duty to report crime is a duty not only of a law enforcement officer, but a citizen. And that is First Amendment. We just believe that's First Amendment protected free speech, and we don't believe Garcetti ruled otherwise.
Don't you think that at some point the chief of police, that's his job outside of a First Amendment duty, but as a chief head law enforcement officer, he has a responsibility to seek assistance and help in investigating what he perceives as criminal activity?
Yes, Your Honor, of course, please, I would agree that it is a part of his duties as a law enforcement officer to investigate criminal activity. And arguably, if it's something he can't handle, for example, we have local law enforcement all the time. It goes to the FBI because for some political reason it can't be done. But it can't be locally prosecuted. But it is still a citizen's duty. And it's a basic right of a citizen is to report crime. That issue was not involved in Garcetti. That's all we're really saying. And, the 5-4 Supreme Court decision, very hotly contested, turns on those particular facts with a prosecutor acting adverse to the interest of his employer and the Supreme Court saying he could regulate his speech. But that's not what we have here.
I articulate for me in a declarative sentence what you say this panel's holding is with respect to this clearly established.
Okay, Your Honor, what I ask the court to hold is two things. One, under Davis v. McKinney, when he went to law enforcement officers under the precedent of this court, that was clearly established law. Second, that just using the general Supreme Court rule that the issue is fair notice, that the mayor would have had fair notice that you can't fire somebody just out of, basic principles of Mississippi law. You can't fire somebody for reporting illegal activity. He would have had fair notice, so he does not have any qualified immunity defense. And I would ask Your Honors, if Your Honor should reach this, to say that Garcetti does not reach into this situation. It doesn't dictate the result of this case. Your Honor, we also had a state law. If the court please, I'd like to mention Judge Mills dismissed our state law claim for malicious interference. It was not the mayor's duty to be supervising the police department, but he was writing up these reprimands, and according to the mayor, he had one of the aldermen, Mr. Smith, he had a personal vendetta against Chief Gibson. That's what one of the aldermen testified to. That one of the dispatchers essentially testified to the same thing. He had malice against Mr. Gibson. An earlier case, it is an unreported case, a non-published case, Gibson v. Estes dealt with a very analogous situation and said that under Mississippi law, malicious interference for employment is a recognized tort in Mississippi. Furthermore, there are numerous cases that say contrary to Judge Mills, and Judge Mills himself has repeatedly said that under the Mississippi statute, there's no requirement that he file a tort claims notice. Under the Mississippi statute, if you're going to sue a governmental entity, you have to give notice. But the Mississippi statute says if one acts with malice, that is outside the scope of his employment, he does not have to give notice. In fact, it would be ridiculous. The suit for malicious interference is against the mayor personally. He maliciously interfered. It's not against the government. It would be senseless to give notice to the government. So we believe Judge Mills erred in that, and we believe that under the rules of civil procedure, it's clear that this court has jurisdiction to overrule that part of the decision by Judge Mills. This was a malicious interference against Gibson, and that we believe Your Honors has jurisdiction to overrule that. As a practical matter, it's absurd to go back. What's now pending in the district court is a suit, the First Amendment case against the city for discharge and retaliation for the filing of this suit. To go back and try that case before we can go back and appeal Judge Mills' dismissal of the state law claim against the mayor individually. Your Honor, I don't know if I've covered everything or if there's anything else I need to bring to Your Honor's attention, or if not, I think that covers the points that I wanted to make.
Well, don't leave yet. I mean, it's still...
All right.
I'll be honest with you. I'm still hung up on the First Amendment aspect. I just still have trouble moving in and out of being the chief of police and the private speech part. Sure, I'm saying I won't get there, but that to me is a moving target. You know, as here, I get it. He reported these things to other agencies, and I get it in terms of what you're saying about, you know, the investigation, et cetera, et cetera. And I've looked back at, you know, the Mississippi statutes to give his duties, et cetera, but it just seems like a slippery slope to say that, you know, certain speech within this capacity is official, yet over here, you know, it's private. It's tough for me to see what the guidelines here, and frankly, I don't know that Garcetti would be read to say as much as what you're arguing, but putting it aside, but just from here, it's hard to see. Having said that, let me back up to ask you, what were the terms of the chief? Is he on the contract? Is he an at-will
employee? He was an at-will employee, yes, sir.
He's an at-will employee?
Yes, sir.
All right.
And the evidence, whatever this is worth, the evidence shows that the mayor was continuously, when he started giving these reprimands, he would suspend him and threaten him with discharge. Now, let me mention something that might be helpful. This is an unreported case, and I'll send Your Honor a 28-J letter, but it's an unreported case, so Your Honor may not pay any attention to it. But I had a case to show you the ramifications of this. It was just decided. It's called Williams v. Riley. It's unreported, and I'll send Your Honor a Rule 28J letter about jailers who reported beatings in the jail. A fellow jailer was beating inmates in the jail. They reported that, and the defense was that that's unprotected speech. That was their duty to report it. This court, in a footnote, although it's unpublished, said we're hesitant to create a First Amendment free fire zone here where you have somebody doing just exactly what he's supposed to do, saying exactly what he's supposed to say, and he gets fired for it. And so that's what's being created here is a First Amendment free fire zone. He's a police chief. He's doing exactly what he's supposed to do, unlike the prosecutor in Garcetti. He's doing exactly what he's supposed to do. He's trying to enforce the law. He's trying to stop criminal activity over there in that city. And he says exactly what he goes to the FBI, he goes to the Attorney General, and significantly he goes to the state auditor, and nobody said he did anything improper. He assisted them in the investigation. In September of 2008, they collect back $3,000 from the mayor, and now they're saying, but we have the right to reprimand you repeatedly with these frivolous write-ups and then cause you to be fired because you did what it was your duty both as a citizen and as a police officer to do. That's the case, and to me, it's the defendants that are seeking a ruling that would seem to just offend basic principles that, you know, you ought to report criminal activity.
I must say, when the Garcetti case came down, my reaction to it was similar to yours, and that is, I don't know why we need this, okay, but we have it, and I'm afraid the gripe really is with the Supreme Court's decision in Garcetti and whether that was a good idea or not, but we're bound by it, so that's the question, whether it fits here, but...
Well, Your Honors, I hope if Your Honor doesn't accept that, Your Honor, take a close look at Davis v. McKinney, because it was reported to outside agencies, and with that in mind, it ought to be as narrowly construed as it could be construed, Your Honor.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Unless there's something else, Chief Justice Stewart.
No, the counsel opposite, I think, rattled off about four things he said you had conceded. So before you sit down, I heard you say you thought the cases he cited were inapposite. Is that anything? Is that all you wish to say about his representation, that you had conceded certain?
No, sir. He said I conceded Garcetti. Garcetti's discussed throughout in the brief. I mean, I quoted it. I don't know what else I could have done.
Okay.
Davis v. McKinney, I didn't see whether the cases that he cites had any factual similarity to this case. And Davis v. McKinney seemed to me to be the case. I thought I did all right on that. I accept criticism in good faith, Your Honor.
I'm not trying to extend your argument. I'm just trying to make sure we got it nailed down tightly so we know who said what, who gave up what space. So, good. You're good. We're good.
I think it's ironic that one of the cases that you cite is the Juarez case, and as I sit here today and I look out the window, I see Juarez.
All right, Mr. Wade, thank you for your brief and your argument.
Yes, sir.
Freeman, rebuttal.
I want to go back. There was a question about whether this was done to a citizen. There are situations all the time with police officers where a police officer, unfortunately, will shoot a citizen, and instead of the police department investigating their own police officer, they'll bring in an outside agency, sometimes the sheriff's department, sometimes an agency of the state of Mississippi to investigate. That's done all the time. I think you had a question about that. As far as this thing about the outside agencies, the Watts case and the Hubert case out of Ninth Circuit, both of those were reported to outside agencies, and both cases the FBI. So those were police officers reporting to outside agencies. Mr. Wade brought up this fair notice under Mississippi law. Mississippi law was irrelevant to a Section 1983 claim for First Amendment. So that it has no bearing here. Mr. Wade brought up the fact that the plaintiff was eventually fired. This case is not about his termination. That is Gibson Part 2. This cuts off the mayor was not sued for the termination, only the city was. So the termination is not an issue here, which brings me to the state law claim. It's our position that this court does not have jurisdiction to determine the state law claim because it's not a final order of the court. And in fact, the plaintiff in his brief cited the correct law in arguing that the court didn't have jurisdiction to hear our causation argument, and that is that absent a final judgment, it wasn't appealable unless there's pendant appellate jurisdiction, which does not apply here. Because if there had been, we would have appealed the denial of summary judgment to the city on the termination. We'd be here on the whole case, but there simply is no jurisdiction. Let me see if I've got everything here. Mr. Wade brought up about malice. Malice is irrelevant to this consideration. There's nothing in the law that says we got to prove or disprove malice. And I believe that's everything, unless y'all have questions.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you to counsel on both sides for the briefing and argument in the case. Interesting issues indeed. We will decide.